We will start with the boilerplate stuff, the IP notes, call notes. We'll select describe. We'll do introductions and reintroductions, and then we'll move to the main point of today. So we have guest speaker Anthony Camilleri to present the Europass digital credential infrastructure. So I'm very excited about this. They're actually using verifiable credentials in their implementation, and they've made a lot of sort of progress in terms of deploying in the real world. So it's going to be very interesting to learn about the challenges and decisions that they made as they went. So let's see. So into IP notes. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreements signed. There's a link in the agenda, but also I'll include it in IRC for how to the link to directly join the credentials community group. You need to ensure you have a W3C web account first. And that's very simple. It's free. And you do that here. And then lastly, if you want to read the full text of the W3C Community Contributor License Agreement, that's available at this link that I pasted in IRC. For call notes, these minutes and audio recording of everything said on this call are archived. And that's at the following location. Taste into IRC, also available in the agenda that was sent out. We use IRC to cue speakers during the call as well as to take minutes. And the information about how to connect was in the email agenda. And all attendees should type present plus, as you probably noticed some other, if you're in IRC, you probably noticed some other people doing. That gets your name on the attendee list in the transcript. And let us know if you have any questions about that. In IRC, type Q plus to add yourself to the queue. That's the letter Q, the symbol plus, no space in between. And you can add an optional reminder after that. So Q plus to mention something. So I'll do an example of that in IRC right now, and that's if you just want to remind yourself of what you wanted to talk about. Okay, so then that put me on the queue, so I'll clear myself. And if you're not on IRC, that's fine. Simply ask to be put on the queue, and we'll call on you when the time comes. And please be brief so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can always queue plus again. And lastly, this meeting is held by voice, not by IRC. And so that means, if you're talking about something relevant to the conversation, it's good for everyone to benefit, including the people who can't join an IRC to cue yourself up and mention it over voice. And any off-topic IRC comments are subject to deletion from the record. Okay, now let's select scribe. So let me just do a quick reminder of what the expectations for scribes are. The scribe was just keeping track of the conversation as it goes. That's what enables us to publish the minutes. And, part of IRC, or part of, sorry, W3C, standards and requirements to help ensure this information reaches a broad array of people. So to do that, you just type the alias of whoever's talking, and you know that because, they're on the queue, and then you just summarize what they said. And, that's sort of essential to how we keep going, and so we appreciate people who scribe, and we also try to spread the burden/joy throughout the community. So we look to rotate beyond the usual people who end up doing it a lot. So with that said, any volunteers for today?
Kim, this is Simone. I can do it if no one else is willing to go.
You've done it recently, so I think that you and Nate have done it the most. So I was hoping to spread the love out a little bit more. So sorry, everyone. Let me try then. We do an approach where with the other CCG, with the main CCG group, where we basically start keeping track of the attendees and, you know, call on everyone. So let me, let's do that approach. And so I'll share that link with, I'll start sharing that in the notes, but let's see. Okay, I think it's unfortunately it's sorted alphabetically, which put Chris Wink at the front of the queue. Chris, are you able to scribe?
Sure, Kim.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay, great. And that also means we won't call on you for a while. The next section is introductions and reintroductions. Okay, anyone new to the call that would like to introduce themselves?
Yeah, Joshua Marks here with Public Consulting Group. My first time on this call, though I've been watching your work from a near.
Great, thanks for joining us.
Hi, good morning. Robbie Jones from Forge Rockware and Identity and Access Management Company. I've been doing the same thing, so I've been watching the working group, but first time on the call.
Great, thank you.
Hi, this is Alexander Mikrogenidis from the Open University in the UK. I've been watching the activities of the group, but this is my first time on such a call. Thanks.
Thank you. And I missed your name. Could you repeat that, Alexander?
Mikrogenidis.
Oh, got it. Okay, I see you there. Thank you. And we are hoping to get an Open University to present at a future call as well. So we'll be reaching out about that. Anyone else would like to introduce themselves? Great. Okay. Well, we have a very meaty topic today, as I mentioned. So we're going to hear about Europass digital credential infrastructure. And we have Anthony Camilleri to present. And actually, Anthony, please correct me if I got your pronunciation wrong. I should have checked that in advance. But I will turn the floor over to you. You have the rest of the meeting to present. And you know, I'll manage the queue. You know, feel free to just go forward. And if it looks like questions are stacking up, then I'll interject to ask you. But otherwise, just feel free to take over.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much, Kim. You got the pronunciation perfectly right. I'm just going to paste a link into the IRC where I am sharing the presentation I'll be giving at the same time. I'm required to say a couple of things before I get going. My name's Anthony Camilleri, and I work for a small education consultancy company that's doing work for the European Commission on digital credentials and on designing the European digital credential infrastructure. The only thing is I'm required to say that I do not officially represent the Commission in any way during this call. With that, I can give you a little bit of introduction on Europass and on Europass digital credentials. So what I'll try and cover over the agenda of the meeting is an introduction to Europass as a whole, a little introduction to some of the laws we have around this area in Europe and some of the legislative constraints that come as a result of that, the design considerations we've put into the system, how we've implemented W3C verifiable credentials, a little information about the actual data model we are implementing inside the verifiable claim, and how we are extending verifiable presentations for some specific use cases in Europe. So it's quite a bit. And the other thing to mention here as well is that all the work that's being done on this is being done through a company called Everest, which is part of NTT Data. So to get started, all of this story starts essentially in January 2018, when, as part of something called the Digital Education Action Plan, the European Commission passed a decision for creating a framework for issuing digitally certified qualifications and validating digitally acquired skills that are trusted, multilingual, and can be stored in professional profiles such as Europass. For those of you that don't know it, Europass is the easiest way to describe it would be a kind of publicly run LinkedIn that is used throughout Europe. And in particular, if you are applying for a position in a public service anywhere across Europe, you do need to describe your CVs using Europass. This means that Europass is one of the most used websites across the European Union, actually, and it has something in the region of 2 million users a month, which are creating CVs and sharing it with employers through there. So, as part of the modernization agenda of the Commission, they decided to also modernize the Europass and integrate digital credentials within it. So I'm presenting a very small part of a project that includes an online e-portfolio that allows individuals to document and describe their skills, qualifications, and experience, and that can be self-description, it can be through including scanned documents, it can be through the inclusion of digital credentials and so on. It includes an information provision section that includes a database of courses in Europe, a database of qualification frameworks in Europe, a database of educational institutions in Europe. It includes an interoperability mechanism, which is intended to be a set of tools that allow member states to share data around jobs and skills amongst each other. And the fourth component is digitally signed credentials, which are intended to allow all parties to create, store, receive, and share digital credentials across a trusted framework. In trying to build a framework for digitally signed credentials, there are a number of laws in Europe which we needed to take note of. The first of which is something called eIDAS. And all you need to know about eIDAS is that eIDAS is a European directive. A European directive means a law that is implemented directly in all member states of the EU, and that sets out mandatory standards for digital ID and e-signature across the continent. The most important line in the directive is that a document that is digitally signed with an eIDAS-compatible signature is legally valid and has legal admissibility in all EU member state countries. The infrastructure is based on PKI certificates managed by certification authorities, which are on a trusted list. And each member state manages its own trusted list of service providers. And then there's a European list of trusted lists of certification authorities that are eIDAS compliant. The second piece of legislation is the GDPR, which I am sure you are quite familiar with. And the GDPR sets a whole bunch of requirements around data minimization, user control of data, consensual processing, accountability, and so on and so forth. From a design perspective, what it also means is if you are going to launch a EU software service, that has to be approved not only by the EU Data Protection Officer, but it potentially also has to survive assessments by data protection officers in all 27 EU member states. So let's just say that there's a very, very high level of data protection baked into anything. Third part of legislation is in educational legislation. And we have a number of standards in terms which describe how can you describe a qualification? What are the levels of a qualification? How do you take a non-formal learning experience and describe it as a formal qualification? And these are essentially vocabulary and content standards that are agreed across Europe. Final thing is that member state education is a matter of national competence in the EU, which means that member states have full freedom to set their own laws, which also means that there are nationally specific laws, including on matters that affect credentials in all 27 EU member states. And the system has to be compatible with all of these laws across the member states. The thing that is most interesting and which, let's say, might be a surprise to some of the people in the call is that in certain member states, student records and student grades are considered to be public data, which needs to be recorded in a public registry, while in other member states, it is extremely private data, which shouldn't be shared with anyone. So our system has to be able to essentially cover both of these contexts. So if you turn this into a set of design considerations or design principles for a system, we ended up with these nine design considerations. First and foremost, to create a framework, because this was the directive from the European Union. And by a framework, we mean that we're not trying to build a software service, but rather we're trying to build something that will allow a number of users and member states to interact with each other. I'll explain this a little more in a moment. Secondly, very, very importantly, we do not have the authority to make any changes or even recommended changes to legislation of any kind, which means everything has to work within the existing legislative framework. Thirdly, we need to design for interoperability. And fourthly, because this is being led by the European Commission, and the European Commission is basically the secretariat of the member states, member states are our primary stakeholders. Educational institutions, learners, and employers are secondary stakeholders through the member states. Any system has to be valid across the entire European Union. Credentials have to have a 40-year lifetime. And the last line then are, let's say, more feature requirements, which come from the member states. And the first of which is any system has to essentially be diploma mil proof. It is very, very, very important to member states that no diploma mil slips in even for a short time. Any system has to work with existing IT systems being used in public service. And the system should be extremely privacy protecting, but not necessarily go as far as being self-sovereign. Given these design considerations, we decided to opt for a framework that is based on three sets of standards and a number of components. So first of all, by a framework, what we mean is that we would publish a set of standards, we would offer web services that implement those standards, and we would offer a number of open source software tools that allow you to use the services. Very critically, the standards are open, and any person, vendor, organization, government can implement their own version of the services and be interoperable with Europass. So this is not meant to be a service that is offered by only the European Union and everyone has to use it, As a matter of fact, when we do our projections, we assume that the European Union software would kind of like be the backup for small providers after vendors have implemented systems. This is the made up. In terms of components, we ADAS provides a set of standards, services, and software to deal with digital signature, e-identity, identification of persons, etc., etc. So for the entire security layer of the system, we essentially rely on the existing ADAS infrastructure. Because we want it to be globally interoperable, after looking at everything that was out there, we decided that W3C verifiable credentials was the only realistic way to go. There was a long, long discussion about whether we should take open badges as our base standard, but for a number of reasons I won't get into in this call at the moment, it was decided that verifiable credentials should be, let's say, the default base standard. And then in the middle, you see that Europass then needs to develop its own set of standards, its own set of services, and its own set of software, which basically implement verifiable credentials using ADAS on a European vocabulary. So in trying to do this, we did come up with a number of issues, mainly that W3C verifiable credential has a preference for JSON as the serialization language, even though it doesn't require it. And on the other hand, ADAS, which is the security directive we need to use, provides implementations for XML and for PDF, but it does not provide a standard for JSON. So you cannot essentially put an enveloped signature inside the JSON file and have that JSON file be legally valid in Europe at the moment. So all the legally valid applications are built around XML. So our challenge has been to express W3C verifiable credentials as XML. And to do it, we've chosen to use something called a XADIS LTA enveloped proof. XADIS is simply the XML standard which implements ADAS, and LTA stands for long-term archiving, which is essentially the proof, it is the proof format that gives you the longest possible signature, which is of between 5 to 7 years, depending how you implement it, and which allows for that signature to be re-signed, allowing for indefinite validity. So what I'm showing on the screen is a very base example of a Europass credential, which essentially is a verifiable credential expressed as XML. And what you see is that at the moment, for the version we are working on at the moment, there's no W3C gamma definition for XML verifiable credentials. So from an information model standpoint, we decided to define a Europass credential as a specialization of a verifiable credential and essentially start the schemata from the Europass credential property. The second design decision you will see here is that we decided that IDs and URIs of properties would be expressed as attributes, while the other elements would be expressed as properties. And the other design decision you see here is that for the type property, we not only provide a URI, but we provide an XSD schema definition file for each credential type we have in the system. As mentioned, one of the limitations of this approach is that there is no standardized verifiable credential XSD. And it's something that honestly would make us a lot more comfortable if it existed. We did draw up an example of what we think one should look like from our perspective. And you see the, let's say, information graph for this on the screen at the moment. But we we did not feel comfortable publishing it as saying this is the European Union's verifiable credential XSE without consultation with the wider community. So moving on from the envelope issues for a moment and going into the content issues. To describe the content of a verifiable credential, we developed an entirely new data model, which is called the Europass Learning Model. And the Europass Learning Model is actually meant to be an educational lifecycle model that takes you from design of a course through to offering a course through to actually credentializing a course at the end. So the Europass Learning Model goes well beyond digital credentials. The first part of this is specifications. And specifications essentially specify what can be learned, what can be done, and how it can be assessed. And our model has support for a lot of different kinds of specifications. We can support occupational profiles, skill classifications and vocabulary, curricula, competence frameworks. And these are all creatures which you actually find in the member states and which needs to be expressed with a common vocabulary to allow for interoperability. When you take a specification and you offer that specification at a specific place, at a specific time, from a specific institution, then it becomes what we call a learning opportunity. And learning opportunities describe an offer by an organization to direct an activity which leads to a learning outcome. So courses, apprenticeships, voluntary experiences, these are all examples of learning opportunities. When you complete your learning opportunity, the experience of your learning opportunity, your personal instantiation of the learning opportunity, is your credential, which then describes the claim about the individual. And our learning model essentially captures all three of these ideas. So what you would find inside a Europass learning credential is, first of all, the credential metadata, which would include all the required fields from the WCT verifiable credential certification. And you would also find issuer data. The issuer data is again coded according to the ADOS regulation that provides standards for how to identify organizations in Europe, and it also allows you to put in any other identifiers, anything from DIDs to national tax register numbers. We also, under the credential type, have a mechanism where governments can say, these are the credential types we have in our country. These are the schema definition files for those credential types, and where we can add those then to a public repository of defined credential types within Europe. Moving to the middle part, which is the claim, of course we have to have information about the person, and again, which information is expressed from the person is mandated by the ADOS directive. And again, we can support, of course, other identifiers. The core part, though, of the content is the bit you see in the lower screen, which are the types of claims that can be included. So we can include information about your learning achievement, and we define your learning achievement as what you have actually learned described in terms of learning outcomes. That learning achievement might include information about an assessment, because an assessment is how you prove you have a learning achievement. We also have two other types, which is we can record a learning activity. And the difference is that while an achievement is from the realm of formal learning and is assessed, a learning activity just says you did something, you attended a course, you went to an employment experience, but without any judgment on how you've achieved it. Entitlements are a special kind of claim, which say that as a result of your learning, you have the right to do something. Examples here would be that you have the right to join the bar after doing a law exam, or you have the right to be a sports guide after doing your TOEIC certification exam, or you have a right to to apply for a master's degree on the result of your bachelor's degree. So they're rights received as a result of learning. The final part is the proof. The Europass implementation of verifiable credentials requires an ADAS e-seal and the XADAS LTA signature to be considered valid. We, of course, accept other proofs, but they then are not considered legally admissible. Moving on to verifiable presentations. So you see on the screen the example of a verifiable presentation that we are using in Europass. Again, it's the same discussion around the limitations of not having a spec directly from the W3C also apply here. But what I wanted to highlight here is that we have been extending verifiable presentations in some interesting ways. One of the things we wanted to facilitate was we wanted to facilitate verifiers, which in our terminology can often be employers, and we wanted to make it as easy as possible for them to have access to verification checks. So one of the things we've done is that we include results of verification checks from the wallet inside the presentation. What this means is that it results in a slightly different workflow than what is described in the verifiable credential standard at the moment. So there's issuance of one or more verifiable credentials. Those credentials are then stored in the credential repository, and the repository runs a set of verification checks on credentials in the repository. We then compose a verifiable presentation, including the results of those verification checks, and we send those to what you might call a would-be verifier. The idea behind this is that we have actually a large number of verification checks inside our specification. So apart from checking for authenticity, we also check format, we check expiry, and we check revocation against the revocation list to the European Union launching. We also check the identity of a person, which is checked against their national EID, which relies on an integration with a set of identity nodes that are rolled out across governments in Europe. And finally, probably the most important thing for a lot of our member states, we also run what we call an accreditation database. And the accreditation database is essentially a registry of trusted issuers for qualifications that has been built on an Ethereum blockchain. A couple of words about that registry of trusted issuers. You don't need to be on the registry to issue credentials. What we have is we have a special protected type of credential, which we call a qualification. And if you want to issue qualifications, you need to be on the trust list of trusted issuers. But you can issue any other type of credential completely openly. When you look at all these sets of verification checks, however, it means that you need an integration with the PKI systems of the certification authorities to check validity. You need an integration with the revocation list. You need an integration with the accreditation database, and you need an integration with the trusted node system for e-identity. Because we felt that this would be a lot for a typical verifier, this is the reason we also gave an option that the verification checks would be included inside the presentation, effectively certified by the European Union, and giving the verifier a much easier workflow to understand what credentials have been sent to them. A summary of what we are trying to do. So what we're trying to do is provide member states with a legally valid framework for issuing, doing, verifying, and storing digital credentials. It's important to say that everything I've mentioned is fully free and mainly open source infrastructure. The reason I say mainly open source is because some of the European Commission systems rely on closed source software such as Oracle databases and so on and so forth. We plan to open source all our code, and in the future we plan to also, let's say, provide support for other databases and so on, so we can call the package fully open source, but we're not quite there yet. We also want to provide integration points for national portals and for vendors, and for integration with national lists of trusted issuers. And we do all of this in 27 languages. This slide gives you an overview of our implementation. I didn't want to spend too much time speaking about the implementation specifically, because the idea isn't to hawk our product, but simply enough to say that you see in this diagram that we rely on 4 different standards on ADAS. We are publishing 5 standards as part of the EDCI, the data model, and then one for each component. In terms of services, we have the issuer software, some wallet software, the accreditation database, and the revocation list. And then on the software side, we are providing the viewer software, which renders, verifies, and exports credentials. And we will be, sometime within the next year, also providing what we call an awarding body wallet, which will be a piece of installable software institutions can use to manage and archive credentials they have issued. You find here some links for more information. The digital credential infrastructure will actually launch more or less in the next month. That launch date has actually been brought forward by 3 months because Europass has now been considered part of the European Union's coronavirus response. But that also means that because we can go forward 3 months, our documentation and some of our, let's say, technical public communication isn't quite at the level we would have liked it to be as we launch. So you will see, let's say, a little bit of the documentation catching up with the service in the next couple of months. The top link is a link to the private beta. It isn't a state secret, but I would ask you not to share it on social media. And the second link is the data model on GitHub. And the data model on GitHub is open for consultation. Because of the rushed rollout of the system, we will be locking the data model at 0.9 for our production version. The idea being that we want to be open to further feedback before we lock it and consider this to be a 1.0 release. A couple of questions I would like to discuss with the community now or at some point is, first of all, how could we engage around an official XML specification of W3C verifiable credentials? And secondly, one of the issues we have discussed a lot is the role of lists of trusted issuers and the idea of reserving certain credential types to lists of trusted issuers. And we were wondering if there's been any discussion in the community around these ideas. I appreciate I have rushed through a massive amount of material in a very, very short time, but I did want to leave some time open for discussion. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you so much, Anthony. And let me see who's first on the queue. Okay, Nate, you're up.
Hey, thank you so much for a very clear presentation. It is really nice to see the examples of all this technology coming together. I had a question about the sort of rich verifier that can do all the extra checks for membership on the accredited providers list, et cetera. Is there any guidance for how long the verification provided by that software that's included in a presentation should be trusted for? And are those verifications sort of revoked or expired through the same mechanisms that the credentials themselves are?
Okay, so the way we've implemented it at the moment is that the type of certificate we use to the type of certificates we use to sign the verifiable presentation with has a default validity of 2 to 3 years, depending on the exact circumstances. The validity of the actual presentation, though, is tied to the to how long the user decides to share it for. So to produce a verifiable presentation, you essentially go to the share this credential link, and that allows you to choose a expiry time for your presentation. And so all the verification checks are tied to that expiry date. Clearly, if the expiry or the credential signature expires before the length of your share link, it won't let you issue that verifiable presentation.
Okay, thanks. So what does that look like over the 40-year lifespan of the credential? Are there sort of renewals or reissuance or anything to keep it alive or upgrade it?
So this is actually, I have a whole presentation on the problems with this approach. One of the known issues we have with the system is that the maximum signature you can put on anything is 7 years in perfect circumstances. And after that, you have to resign. It doesn't have to be the issuer that resigns it to maintain the validity. So the wallet can, for example, re-sign credentials that were done by a different issuer. Nevertheless, it does create a requirement to essentially use a cloud-based wallet of some kind to maintain those credentials. We do have a design requirement that we would like users to be able to store credentials offline and to be able to store those credentials offline for 40 years. You see how these two don't completely match with each other. One of the things we are looking at the moment is actually some of the ideas around blockchain-based self-sovereign identities for this. The issue with this is, though, is that there's a whole community of working groups, legislative groups, etc., that are working on the version of the European identity legislation. The rumor is that it will be more self-sovereign than the current version, but honestly, I don't actually have insight on that part of the policymaking. So our current position on this is at the moment we have to re-sign in a cloud wallet if you want to maintain validity longer than 7 years. You can keep it offline and you can use the credential offline, but clearly then it will expire. And we are somewhat waiting to see the documents that will come out of the identity groups in the next year or two to define the approach beyond that. Considering our first credentials will have a 7-year validity, we have a little bit of time to work with it though.
Very interesting. Thank you.
And I'm next on the queue, and I have I'll break mine up into separate questions. So I'll start following up in what you were talking about with the SSI aspect. I'm going to include a link to a webinar recently done by Nacho Alamillo about his work looking into kind of applying SSI to EIDAS frame regulations. And there were, at the end of the presentation, he has quite a few points about, you know, sort of things like getting these sorts of credentials recognized as I guess, what was the, there was a term that you used, Anthony, for the sort of the legally binding signatures. So he called out quite a few work items, and I wanted to point people to that to start with. But my first question I'll start with, there was a slide where you were talking about credential repository, and I think you touched on it more when you're answering Nate's question. But so the credential repository, I wasn't sure what sort of implications that had. Like, is that intended as long-term storage. The diagram we saw, it looked like it was unclear if it was something that was storing credentials on a long-term basis or sort of a pass-through state to enable verification.
So I put the diagram back up on screen. Could you just tell me which component? Because I'm not actually sure which one. Or actually, I'll just clarify it a little bit. So I'm very well aware of the work on SSI being done at EU level. I'm actually a member of the groups that are looking at this on the platform. So this is something we are looking at very, very, very actively. Honestly speaking, looking at the way legislation goes in Europe, I would personally be very, very surprised if we saw anything legally binding in less than 5 years. In terms of different types of repositories, to be clear, a credential is an XML file. You can store the XML file on your device, and you're perfectly happy with that. The EDCI viewer is a pass-through. So you upload your credential, the viewer shows it, it verifies it, the second you close it, it clears everything from the cache. We are planning in our next release to have fully offline versions of the viewer. If you want to store it in a cloud-based service, we provide a cloud-based service that is integrated with the overall CV builders of the wider Europass, which we call the wallet. But the wallet is essentially, let's say, just the back-end database that serves our entire CV editor as part of the wider Europass.
Great, thank you. And one of the interesting things that you talked about is absolutely yes, I don't see the legal, the recommendations, I guess to back up, that SSI webinar I was sharing mostly for people in this group who may not have seen that yet. So definitely any recommendations there are longer lead in your estimate of in the several year timeframe. Definitely makes sense. I think that what's interesting is the question you point to of how, how we can move what you're doing into official W3C standards. And I have some notes on that or some comments on that, but Juan's on the queue next. I'm going to call on him and then I'll add myself to the queue again.
Hey, can everyone hear me? I'm not sure my connection's good.
Yes.
Okay, cool. I was just going to ask on the recent red
Juan, you're cutting out now. Can you say that again? Juan?
Maybe if you type the question, I can get to it.
Yeah, that would be good. And Juan, can you do that? And actually, I have another question while he goes. So, question / comment. It did seem like one of the interesting opportunities was, two paths. So first of all, there had been talk about, as opposed to leading, the specifications with, here are some reference formats like JSON, JSON-LD. With the decentralized identifier spec, there's interest in leading with a data model as opposed to, here's some examples of that thing encoded in different formats. And to me, that makes a lot more sense. And I've always been surprised that the verifiable credential data model didn't do that. So there's two aspects, in the verifiable credentials specification is it's being maintained in the CCG. It's sort of, maintenance spec. But, whether there's interest in a data model version of more abstract data model version of verifiable credentials, but then also more importantly, you had proposed a verifiable credential XSD. I think another path that might be even more straightforward would be a rev of the verifiable credentials data model that includes
you know, in addition to JSON, JSON-LD can include XML, and then we publish the schema and any other sorts of, you know, supporting material needed for that. Because certainly if this is something that's actually being used and can be tied to legally binding signatures, it would be very compelling to move to support that. I was curious, Anthony, from your perspective, what are the sort of highest priority items? And actually, yeah, and then after that, we have a question from Juan from IRC.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what I will say on this is having it abstracted at data model level is something we would definitely appreciate. In terms of the guys we have actually coding the XML, because here I'm slightly beyond my area of expertise, but the thing which they tell me they would appreciate most would actually just be a namespace for verifiable credentials they could use in XML, if nothing else, because it just somehow makes it easier to locate it within the entire infrastructure.
So can you repeat that? When you say namespace, are you talking about just in terms of the availability of the verifiable credential XSD?
As I understand it, in order of priority, it would be just having a namespace which says this is a verifiable credential for XML. An XSD would be nice after all, but if nothing else, a way of saying in the header that this is a verifiable credential.
I got it, yes. Okay, so yes. So namespace a header. I'm just making notes because I think that sounds very doable. And then great. And then we have a question from Juan, which is, okay, I just wanted to hear more about the revocation infrastructure, one per issuer, one for all of Europe, something in between, any specifics?
Okay, slightly embarrassingly, one of the things we have had to pause because of having everything moved to the 3 months forward is the revocation infrastructure. So we are actually launching without the revocation infrastructure, and then we will, let's say, launch the revocation infrastructure during the summer, which is not completely ideal. But the way we are doing it is that we actually have what we call a revocation cascade. So the EU will operate its own revocation list as part of the Europass. And we will also be releasing a specification which allows member states to have their own revocation lists. Member state revocation lists will have certain special features because you will be able to publish credentials you did not issue yourself in a member state revocation list. The use case here is that this will allow, for example, a court to revoke batches of credentials if they have been found to be fraudulent or something like this. And finally, any other party can issue its own revocation list. So the way we have it done is that when you issue a credential, you will be able to essentially, in the revocation property, say that if I ever revoke this credential, I will revoke it at a revocation list that is at this address. And additionally, the verifier will check the national revocation list and the European revocation list. So there's always this cascade of indicated list and the nationally operated list.
Great. And so let me see if there's anyone in the queue before I have you. Please add yourself to the queue if you have any questions. I had another. So again, one thing that I found really compelling is that it demonstrates that you're using verifiable credentials in existing frameworks, you know, the idea of, you know, so a lot of the work in SSI, we don't know yet whether the credentials issued, you know, will end up being acceptable in real world scenarios, frankly, without this kind of work and other work that's happening, I think. You know, and so for this, what I found interesting is, you know, you're using the verifiable credentials data model in that, in terms of how you identify the issuer and the subject,
you know, there's a URI, which it can be a decentralized identifier. And a decentralized identifier doesn't necessarily have to be a fully decentralized SSI kind of method. I was curious to learn more about how you approach identity. You know, one approach that a lot of us are considering is things sort of like the DID web method that leverage existing, you know, identification methods, you know, through domain, web domains, things like that. I was curious to hear more about identity and how you approached it in terms of the verifiable credentials data model.
Okay, so I can give you the current version of that and the future version of that. So in terms of the current version, for these legal validity things I've been talking about in terms of ADAS, ADAS provides a scheme for identifiers for legal persons and for natural persons. For legal persons, it's a complicated equation that basically brings together your various tax IDs into one universal identifier for the organization, which is then coded into your hardware ECL. And for natural persons, it's actually as simple as name, surname, and date of birth, which is coded into an identifier. So what we essentially do at the moment is that we publish a URI for each institution or person within our own namespace, and we, at the end of the URI, we put their ADAS identifier. But just to be clear, these are not real dereferenceable URIs at this stage. The next part of this, though, is that as part of the work the EU is doing on self-sovereign identity, there are a couple of different working groups that are working on actually linking the ADAS IDs formally to decentralized identifiers. There's actually working details of this already going around. So we are hoping that, let's say, not in 5 years, but hopefully within about a year from now, we would actually be in a position to say that we can offer DIDs that are linked to your ADAS credentials.
Exactly. That sounds very doable. So, that's the great approach. I think that for a lot of initial pilots for educational credentials, especially when, you know, even if you are interested in SSI approaches, you know, what can people use at scale? You know, not everyone will have the ability or, you know, inclination to get a decentralized identifier in, you know, their own way, right? So I think that the idea of reaching a lot of people through some service like this is very compelling. So, I'm interested to follow up on that. We are near time. I wanted to just make sure if there's anyone else on the queue. No one else. So I'm very interested in following up the idea of, you know, getting proper namespace for verifiable credentials in XML. So I'll follow up on that. I think that might end up being a CCG work item or something like that, but I think that's very doable. And this has been a great conversation, great introduction to EDCI, and thank you so much, Anthony.
It was a pleasure.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.